5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another hour of Tech Talk. I am Stephen Scott, and this week we have got so much to get to. I'm going to jump right in, introduce my guests. Tim Schwartz from lifeafterblindness.com. Hello to you, sir.
Hello, Stephen Scott. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. As good as I can be. We got up early today to do this, and you've stayed up late. Our days are meeting. I think if you get your sleeping pattern into a different kind of order, you actually will be on UK time.
I'm not far off from being on UK time. I was actually thinking about that earlier today, preparing for this episode. It's like, you know, just a couple more hours and I would be just perfectly on UK time.
Yeah.
I'm pretty close.
That would be fine. Robin Christofferson's here. Fit as a fiddle, bright as a button.
I am.
Other analogies are available. Is that analogy or metaphor?
I don't know. Or simile. Simile. Don't know.
Robin's from AbilityNet, and yes, he is in fact bright as a button. Look, I know you didn't want to bring it up, but I'm going to bring this up anyway. Used to be a lord, still a lord, I believe, but he's also now a doctor as well. What are you a doctor of, and what's going on?
Well, I was flabbergasted earlier this year to receive a letter to say that I was going to receive an honorary doctorate from the University of Suffolk. So yeah, that's where I was on Friday.
Well done.
Yay.
Well done.
Done up to the nines. I look like something out of the court of Henry VIII or something. elaborate robes, this big floppy hat and tassel and stuff. And
yeah, but what did you wear for the ceremony?
Yeah. So yeah, talking to the undergrads about, well, graduates by, well, I was talking to them and then mere minutes afterwards, they became graduates because they all filed up on the stage and got their certificates. So, yeah, talking about the importance of accessibility to all of those computer science graduates that will be going out into the world, making it a better place. So really important message. But yeah,
definitely.
Very, very honoured.
Well, listen, I think that's great news. And I think any opportunity to beat the drum of accessibility is brilliant. And to do that and be recognised in that way, I think as well, you know, we will obviously be having lots of jokes at your expense over the next couple of weeks and months, of course. But the thing is, you know, in all seriousness, what a great opportunity to promote accessibility, obviously, but also for you, I think, to be up there, you know, really, essentially, for those students, seeing capability. That's what it's all about. To me, that is what the success of good advocacy is in our world. I mean, I know there's lots of ways people want to advocate for the rights and challenges of blind people and disabled people generally. But truthfully, the best way is through this kind of advocacy, through this kind of showing what's possible and the fact that we are capable as anybody else. And that proves that to people. It shows that to people.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's great. Well, listen, well done. And we will, of course, as I say, many jokes coming your way. I'm going to actually write down a list of my ailments and we'll start on that next week, okay, on the show. We'll do that off the bat. Right, let's get into this week's news. I want to start off with a story we haven't touched on for the past couple of weeks. We had the Apple event last week, of course, and that kind of took over most of our conversation. But this week on the show, I want to focus on a couple of the bits we've missed. I want to vacuum up the other stories that we didn't get to. We're going to talk about Amazon and their app.
I was going to say, is there an Amazon device for that, for vacuuming up the rest of the news?
There probably is, yeah. See, you can't say the other word that begins with H because that goes against broadcasting rules. But, you know, it's vacuuming.
Yes.
So, yeah, we're going to talk about the Amazon app and the disaster that was and some news on that, an update on that for you. Also, we're going to be hearing from one of the team at Technology for Life, and today it's on one of my favorite topics, keyboard shortcuts. I loved keyboard shortcuts. And
you could have stopped at keyboards.
Well, that's right, exactly, yeah, anything to do with keyboards. But you know what, I love this. I mean, and I'm seeing people now on Twitter using, I don't know what the hashtag is, but there's the sort of occasional conversations that start up, and some of it isn't among blind people, some of it's general, and I love that because I love to learn about other keyboard commands within programs and how they can make the program easier to navigate. You know, I think a lot of people think, especially when they start using a screen reader, my wife was in this position where she would think that every keyboard shortcut was unique to JAWS. And I'd be like, well, yeah, there are some. There are definitely, there are lots of keyboard commands specific to JAWS.
Yes.
But individual applications do have their own shortcuts as well. Now, it could be as simple as holding down command, the letter C to copy text once you've selected it. It could be, you know, control V, and I'm talking on a PC here, to paste. You know, those are system-wide, if you like, shortcuts. Those work in those applications that support that. And they are irrelevant whether you have a screen reader running or not. Obviously, the screen reader adds more shortcuts. So, you know, I just think it's good for people to know what the options are out there. So really looking forward to hearing what the team have got to say on that one. Plus, we'll get to some more of your emails as well. But yeah, let's kick off with the biggest story that's been talked about in the blind community and in the deaf community as well for a number of weeks now. And that is audio description and subtitling captions on UK TV. Now, Tim, in the UK here, we've had this problem where on Channel 4 in the UK, on ITV to some degree, and Channel 5, and on some other channels, on some digital channels, we've not had any subtitling or any audio description on any of the programmes that were broadcast. And just to be clear on this, because this is Channel 4 in particular we're talking about here. BBC, Channel 5, and ITV seem to have got it sorted. I think, I know that ITV audio description services are in-house. So, and I think it's fair to say all access services, I didn't check that before we came on, but I think all access services on ITV are provided in-house. So they wouldn't have been affected as easily, although I think there was a small amount of impact on certain programmes. The company Red Bee Media that creates the subtitles and the audio description and the signing was the company affected, and I guess those programmes that that were made, or the AD, the signing and subtitles were made by Red Bee Media was affected here. Now, as I'm saying, this article on BBC website and BBC News says that this outage, which will last now for almost 2 months, was caused by a fire suppressant system destroying hard disks at a broadcast centre. The emergency backup subtitling system also failed, and the channel is having to build a brand new system from scratch, and said it will fix the problem more quickly than its current prediction of mid-November if it can. The incident at the broadcast centre, owned by Red Bee Media, also affected other broadcasters like, as I said, BBC and Channel 5, although their services have now been restored. Channel 5, in a statement, Channel 4, in a statement, said they would like to apologise to viewers for not currently being able to provide access services. We realise how frustrating this is for viewers. The broadcaster will begin to offer subtitles for its biggest shows like The Great British Bake Off and Gogglebox and its online catch-up service, All Four, from this week. However, the channel cannot provide audio description or sign languages at all. These services were irretrievably lost during the incident, and we won't be able to restore them until we move to the new system we are building. And that update came on Tuesday of last week. It added, "We cannot rush this and run the risk of something going wrong. Something like this needs to be installed slowly to ensure our channels don't come off air and to prevent something like this happening again. That means that full access services might not be available until the middle of November. Clearly, if we can do anything to speed up this process, we will." It is just unbelievable when you hear that, you know, here we are in a position where this is a main broadcast channel. This isn't, you know, Mickey Mouse TV, although I'm perfectly convinced that Mickey Mouse TV is a brilliant broadcaster. But in this case, I just think this is ridiculous. You know, this is absolutely ridiculous. And why was the backup, you know, where was the backup in place? And why is it seen? And this is the bit that gets to me. And I guess the conversation that maybe hasn't been had as much is it shows the value of the services in some degree that, you know, it can be off for this length of time. How long do you think it would take for the broadcaster to fix the channel going off here, or the sound to go on their channel? They couldn't get sound all of a sudden. How long do you think it would take for that to be fixed?
It sounds like they didn't have a backup off-site. So 3-2-1 is the rule for backup. 3 copies. I mean, this is kind of like the, you know, the pro advice. 3 copies of something, at least 2 different formats. You know, so don't have all your copies on hard disk, for example, that might all fail. And 1 of them should be off-site. So 3-2-1. So yeah, they needed a Dropbox backup there.
Yeah, exactly.
And the silver lining here, though, is that they are, at least in that statement, saying, you know what, we're working on not only rebuilding what was, you know, caused damage in the fire suppression, but then our backups, we're working on making sure that it's better going forward. So there is a silver lining that hopefully if this, you know, unfortunately were to happen again, hopefully it would be a better system in place, because it doesn't sound like they'd implemented something that, you know, was going to work very, very well. The other thing to keep in mind here is that audio description tracks, for the most part, there might be isolated situations with different streaming services, but for the majority of networks and services, audio description tracks, just like your language tracks, are separate tracks. They are not like just the voice or just the AD that's attached to a you know, actual film or a movie with just the pictures. It is a separate track for the movie. And so they probably, most likely, once those description tracks were created, they have them on very specific, you know, servers and then specific backups. And so if that individual one is taken out or is damaged, then that's what we're talking about. So they've got to find a way to make sure that they're all implemented together, they're all safe and sound together, and that the backup is all, you know, safe and sound. So it sounds like they're doing the right thing and getting it taken care of. But yeah, I mean, 2 months, I think you're right, Stephen. If this had been, you know, the actual network, like everything of the network going down, I mean, you probably wouldn't see it more than a week, you know, most likely, that it would be down. At least they are getting to it. I'm still trying to fight with some services and some places to just get AD to begin with. So,
this is actually part of the reason I wanted to bring this up, because obviously we are at the point where things are being resolved and, you know, clearly the channel, I don't doubt. I know, working in broadcast for as long as I have, working with teams of people who are very technical people who want to, you know, there's no denial that the channel wants to get this fixed. No one's sitting on their hands
here.
Absolutely,
yeah.
I absolutely believe that. I mean, no one's sitting around saying, oh, we'll get to it next week. These blind people moaning about not being able to watch TV. No, that's not the case. That is absolutely not the case. However, I do think this is an opportunity for us to really push the fact of the importance of audio description. And I'd like to see more of us as blind people. I know the deaf community have been very vocal about this, you know, talking about the impact of not having sign language and subtitling, you know, even subtitling, because, you know, if you bring back subtitling, that's great for some people, but some people, you know, can't use that. They need sign language, you know, so it's that sort of, you need to provide all of it. And I think we need to, in the blind community, really step up a bit here and talk about the value of audio description, because I think it could help raise the conversation to organizations, to channels, to these online providers. The importance of having audio description is basically the difference for me between watching it and not watching it. If it doesn't have AD, I'm not watching it. When I put on Netflix these days, I go to a program and it says, you know, this is a Netflix, you know, the Netflix original or whatever. When I press play on that, if I don't hear audio description, if I don't hear, you know, colors explode into a whatever it is, you know, at the beginning, then I'm not tuning in, because that's it. There's no point wasting my time. And I think what this has really highlighted for me is the lack of availability. And it's not that we didn't know this, but it really highlighted it, that the lack of audio description on demand means that, let's say they're able to bring back some shows. Maybe the hard drive is recovered, right? And they managed to get all the audio tracks back. Let's say that happens. Okay, so great, we've got all these shows again, but they're not going to rebroadcast them all again just for us. They're going to put them online. But you've got to have the structure in place to have it with audio description online as well. And in fairness to Channel 4, they do have that facility. All 4 does have a lot of shows with audio description, and thankfully they have the facility for it. ITV are working harder, I think, to make it available on more platforms. At the moment, it on demand is pretty much rooted to certain devices, which, I mean, Apple TV doesn't have it, for example, which I find really irritating. So you can't, you know, enjoy an ITV show on a TV with audio description. It's got to be on a phone.
You can't enjoy it here in the United States. I mentioned this to you guys offline, I think, a couple days ago. I was very excited to see that I could get a 7-day free trial for a very particular British content app that's available here in the States. I know you guys have you know, similar access to this, and, you know, all these different shows. And I'm like, yay, I can catch up in a legal way on all my favorite British movies and TV shows. And it has zero audio description. And I'm like, wait a minute, I know that the originals of these, almost all of them probably have AD in the UK, and the app does not. So my 7-day free trial was over. I canceled it. I would have been happy to pay the $6 a month that would have cost me here in the US to have access to all this wonderful content, and none of it's described. It's just, it boggles the mind. I really expected that it was going to be described, because I've gotten to the point where if I go to an app or a service or what have you, and I start playing something and it does have description, I'm just pleasantly surprised. I go into it thinking, well, it's probably not going to have it, but if it does, great. There was a show that you recommended to me very recently, Stephen, and my wife and I went into an app last night, looked it up. It's got audio description for all the episodes of all the seasons, so we've already started watching it. And I'm so excited because it actually has it. And I didn't expect it to, because it's a show that's a few years old. But on this British app, I'm like, I just don't get it. They're there, you know? So it's many fold that we have to kind of take this on. And I say all that to your point, Stephen, of this is an opportunity for us to all say, hey, you know what? Because of this, hey, by the way, did you know this doesn't have AD, or this could have AD, or this had it and doesn't, or this should, you know, it's a good conversation to have to bring awareness to the topic.
We need to really ramp up the conversation on this, I think, because this is an opportunity. This is making headlines. You know, this is in the news. People are talking about it. And, you know, I imagine, and it's interesting when I see the headlines, I've seen this a few times now, the headlines themselves will talk about subtitles and other services. No. Signing and audio description are not other services. They are equally as important as the subtitles, in my view.
And obviously, signing has so much less coverage than
absolutely, but exactly, you barely hear about signing with the, you know,
typically a live event, a live performance, or a live, you know, broadcast or news conference or something. You're going to get a live signer, but for something that's pre-recorded, it's rare. It's
sadly very rare. Yeah, it is. But no, I think, you know, get in touch with RNIB, broadcasting@rnib.org.uk. I think the RNIB team have been working very hard with the broadcasters to get information about what this outage means, how long it would last. So if you have any questions or queries, do direct them to that mailbox, broadcasting@rnib.org.uk, and share your stories about your love of AD. You know, let's talk about this. Let's use this as a positive opportunity, because as I know, I've been to a number of forums for ITV, Sky, Netflix, BBC. I've sat on a number of panels, and when I've talked to the describers themselves and explained the value of this, it's changed their view. You know, they don't get feedback. They don't hear from the community. And because they don't hear from us, they don't really know what we think of anything they do. And that's not good. That's really not good. We can't sit at home and say, that was terrible, and this was awful, and this was... We've got to tell people. We've got to tell the right people. So, you know, make your voice heard. Contact RNIB in the first instance. Tell us, email us here, and we'll you know, share your story, because I think it's a really important topic, and this has certainly brought it to the forefront. Okay, let's move on to Amazon, because Amazon brought out, or Amazon didn't bring out, but Amazon have an app that, you know, let's just say I've been on a few times.
Just a few times.
Just a couple of times I've used it to, you know, purchase the odd thing.
An hour.
Yes, it was only an hour of my life I spent on it, and then I bought the entire store. I just basically said select all and add to basket. Send me two of them just in case.
You've just moved into an Amazon warehouse, haven't you?
It feels like it sometimes. It really does. When you have to get a company out with a, you know, a specialist van to take away all the boxes, you know you've got a problem, right? That's when you know things aren't going the way they should be.
When you knew you had a problem? All right.
Yeah, that's when I knew. I had to get a team in to remove the boxes. It's ridiculous.
Hey Robin, how much sooner than that did we know he had a problem?
Yeah, well, you know, we tried an intervention, but yeah.
I know. But no, I think this is interesting. So the Amazon app did have a flaw with it. Now, I can say the good news is there is an update that is coming through, and it has resolved it. The issue was you could search for something, but then you couldn't get to any of the results. So that was obviously useless.
And even if you got to a result or pasted in a link somehow or clicked the link to get to the app, you couldn't see the result like the details of that result.
Yeah.
I had that problem. And thankfully, I thought I was going crazy. And I sent a message to our WhatsApp group, and our good friend Sean Priest came back and said, yeah, me too. I can't do it. I'm like, oh, shoot, it's not just me. And then I went online. And of course, it was the whole world, because I was trying to look at something very specific, something I wanted to get as an accessory for my AirPods. Ooh. And I couldn't do it. I'm like, really? I just want to spend money. Why won't you let me spend my money? I couldn't do anything. It was very frustrating.
And again, it took a good, while to get resolved. But thankfully, it did get resolved. That's the good news. Yes, it should have been quicker. But again, I don't imagine they were sitting on their hands on it. I'm sure they were planning to get it fixed. But again, we've got to feedback, right? That's what it's about. We've got to feedback to these companies and tell them that there are problems, because otherwise they won't know. They're not reading Twitter all the time, So unless something really bubbles up over the top, then you don't really, you wouldn't be aware of it. So feedback is key. But it has been resolved, and now I think there's a bit of a difference. I haven't been on, if I'm honest. I've actually been trying to keep off the app for a little while, so I've been avoiding it. But from my understanding, that
how are you feeling, Stephen? How
itchy at how the moment? Itchy, yeah. Maybe going to actually pop on Amazon
worse,
and see if there's anything for that.
Is it worse for you to be away from chocolate or Amazon?
That's a difficult one.
I know. That's why I asked.
You see, the thing is that Amazon bring chocolate.
Here it comes.
So,
oh, brother.
Yeah, you see a problem there.
Yeah, right? I stepped into that one.
Yeah, so they're both required. So Apple event was last week. Feels like a distant memory now. Anybody bought anything since then?
Nope.
From Apple? No. No.
What about that?
Well, and you
what
can't
about the polishing cloth? Did you not buy the polishing cloth?
The polishing cloth, yeah, exactly. No, and I just saw earlier today that the MacBook Pros are back ordered through almost earlier mid-December now. So if you were one of the early orders, you're going to be waiting a while.
I was listening to the guys on This Week at Tech at the weekend, and well, it was actually the Mac Break Weekly podcast, and they were talking about the fact that on the day, the best you could get was the base model 14-inch. And then from that point forward, any customization was pushing you into November, December. That's likely to happen, though, isn't it? Because we are in the middle of a global supply chain shortage. Forget the politics of this. We're in the middle of a supply chain shortage. This isn't unique to the UK. It's worldwide.
Definitely not.
And that's the problem.
I can sadly report to you from the Midwest of the United States, it's not just in the UK.
So... yeah, we're not seeing, and this is, of course, affecting the other product launch of last week, which is Google's Pixel 6 and 6 Pro, which is the most leaked product and most talked about product by Google, not like by John Prosser, on Twitter, now, right? I mean, this was like Google themselves.
When you say leaked, it's not like when it was going to blow up and all that, and like things were going to go bad. It was information was leaked, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Just to be clear.
Sorry, I can't get away from the exploding Android phones. It just, I know it's years old and it's way behind us, but I just
for, I'm getting a note in my ear here. Just so people are aware, there's no blowing up phones now.
Phones
aren't blowing up. We're fine.
Blowing up phones, no phones exploding.
You cannot buy it's really annoying, isn't it? You cannot get an exploding phone anymore. What has happened to the world?
I mean, you could probably, never mind. No, anyway, I'm going to tell you something about this Google event. That's startling. If I wasn't already so invested in the Apple economy and loved my Apple phones and I'm used to it and just I'm too old to learn something new, not really, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I actually really, really like what I heard about the Pixel 6 and their quote unquote flagship Pixel 6 Pro, as they said, their first flagship phone. I think the entry prices sounded really good. I know those go skyrocketing up just like Apple or anybody else, but I really liked what I heard. I like some of the things they put in here. And if I were a person right now looking between the two, I honestly don't know what I would do. If I was a blind or low vision person who said, I could use voiceover or talk back, doesn't matter to me, because of all the gestures now for both, you have multi-finger gestures now for Android and the quality of these phones and the pricing of these phones. If I was new to either of them, I'd be very confused. I really would be, because I like this. I really do.
I'm stunned. I'm stunned. I am.
So was I when it hit me.
Honestly, I expected you both to say, I think Robin might, I expect, you know, both of you to say, how boring, an hour on a phone, because that's how I felt. I just felt, you know, this was so boring. I mean, yes, I think the problem is sometimes the presentation. It could do with a bit of, you know, happiness energy in it. Some more coffee was required, I think, before that presentation. But, you know, there were certainly things in there that were exciting, like the new chip. They've done what Apple have done. And I think in some ways this always seems to fall under the radar a bit, especially by, you know, tech journalists like us who kind of just go, yeah, whatever, Apple's better. You know, we don't, but that's not the truth here, right? The truth is that Google have actually done something pretty impressive, bringing out their own architecture. And they're all going down this route. I mean, you know, companies like Intel, you know, must really be worrying about this. I mean, obviously, they have plenty of clients at the moment, but, you know, on the Microsoft side. But, you know, Microsoft might get to that point as well one day where they start to bring out their own chips and kind of slowly heading in that direction. Who knows? But anyway, yes, your thoughts, Robin. Tim's thoughts have astounded me.
It was well received, I think. You know, generally speaking, people are impressed with what they heard. The only potential reservation is that it's a Gen 1 system on a chip. So yes, this is, they've joined the system on a chip, the package where everything is built in, which gives you much faster performance, much lower power consumption.
Can we just dig into that a little bit? Because I think people, I didn't understand this really at all. And I must admit, the Apple event did give me a bit more insight into this. And the Google event would have if I'd been able to stay awake. But just put some more life into it, guys. Just a bit more life. Even put some jaunty music behind it. Ding, 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 ding. You know, something like that behind it would have been nice. You know, to get me going.
If you watched the Google event and then turn around and watch like the previous Apple event, take all that music and all those sound effects out of the Apple event, it was basically the same event because I'm not saying this is good or bad because I like the presentation of it, but I do wish that Google had added more, like you said, some music and some sound effects.
But it's so shallow, isn't it? It's so shallow because it doesn't, it actually loses the point.
It's what we're used to now.
I know.
It's what we've become accustomed to. They're all putting on these big presentations.
I want to talk about this chip because it's called the Tensor chip. So think about it, I suppose, like when Apple announced the M1. So, you know, it's a system on a chip. Robin, what does that actually mean?
So it means that all of the separate chips are now in there. So the RAM that was separate certainly still is on most desktop and laptop computers, but obviously not the M1 and M1 Pro and M1 Max machines. So it's very much the model of mobile phones. It's the RAM's brought in, the GPU is brought in, the neural engine is brought in, and when everything's on the same chip, then it's much faster. The lanes, the kind of like communication lanes between the different parts of the chip are much faster, and you can have much broader lanes. You can have, you know, 32 lanes of information between them, and it's really, really fast. So yeah, you just get performance benefits, you get power consumption benefits. And it makes it much more expandable because you're not constrained by the more conventional ways of linking these different components together. So, yeah, it's almost infinitely expandable. And we saw that with the M1 Pro and the M1 Max, where, you know, it's, you know, 64 GPU cores, 64, you know, both high efficiency and performance cores. So many things just crammed in there. And it takes up hardly any more power. So, you know, this is a completely different generation.
So in my head, this is how I see this, right? So I imagine a house in my head with, you know, that kind of typical, you know, house with four windows, right? And every single window has someone working in it, right? They're all in different rooms. And that would be the typical previous architecture. You know, you might have the processor working in one room, you've got the RAM working in another, you've got the graphics working in another, whatever. Now they're all in the same room. The four people have decided to come into the same room and work together. And as a result of that, they can communicate, they can talk, they can share between each other much more quickly, much more efficiently. Is that it?
Yeah, or even separate houses, one house for the CPU, one house for the GPU, and you'd have to get in a car and drive between them. That was the, you know, how slow it would be to be able to share information. Whereas now, yeah, it's all kind of instantaneous in the same package. There's no constraints around how big you can make the lanes of communication between those different component.
So that's going to make a huge difference to Google smartphones, which, by the way, can I just be honest here? I've never really noticed a big problem with smartphones. I mean, in terms of speed, and this is it, we tend to talk a lot about Apple, obviously, but, you know, but with Google smartphones as well, not even Google, Samsung, I think back to the Motorola, which, if I was to consider the best Android experience I ever had, it was on a Motorola. It was a Motorola G5, I think, and yep, I loved that. I loved that phone because it didn't have the big slidey screen, as I call it. You know, and I think it's a lot to do with the glass. I think the higher-end phones, the glass is really good for, you know, those swipes and those gestures that you would do, but for a top back user, it's just a bit too much like a skating rink for me. Whereas the older, or not older, but the cheaper end don't have those kind of screens, and whatever the difference is, it's actually much easier to swipe on. So lower cost sometimes works really well, but the processor inside those phones often is the cost, right? You're going to be spending less money. If you're spending, say, between £100 and £200 for a phone, you would expect, you know, that to be radically different to a phone that costs £900 to £1,000. But I can't say I've noticed that. I mean, yes, it's a little bit slower, a tiny bit more sluggish. For most people, especially at the entry level, you wouldn't know. You would not know. When I started out with Android, I had no expectations at all. And when I got that Motorola, I was pleasantly surprised. It was only when I got to the bigger phones and found other challenges that when I went back to the Motorola, I did notice a bit of lag. But it wasn't anything really concerning. I mean, it wasn't any worse than using an iPhone 7 today versus an iPhone 12 Pro or whatever, 13 Pro. So I just think it's very interesting to see this technology move on. And I think that the processor, it's obviously not built for a screen reader. It's not, you know, built for that performance. Yes, the performance will benefit the screen reader, but it's not built for that. It's built for gaming. It's built for applications that require, you know, huge amount of graphics. But to go back to your point, Tim, because I'm intrigued by this, what was it about that or these devices that made you think, you know, if you wanted to, you might jump ship?
I think that the entry-level cost was good because, as you just said, if we're a totally blind person who's not playing heavy loaded graphics type games and you know, needing to have, you know, 120 hertz resolution turned on and all those kind of things, if you're totally blind or have low vision and aren't really using a lot or any of the screen, the entry level price is very nice. It's very comparable to your iPhone line. And I like how they have adopted this idea of putting everything on that chipset. Because think about it, you know, in the past, especially even on a PC, I 20 or so years ago, you know, built PCs quite a bit for myself and for other people and would sell them and things like that. And you had everything on a completely separate dedicated port. And so that does use a lot more power, and there is a lot more involved, like Robin was talking about. And so the consolidation of it, the speed of it, the upgradability of it, if you wanted, I mean, I think the Pro, you could take it up to like 16 gigs of RAM. The 13 Pro, I looked up earlier today, goes to 6 gigs of RAM. So it is nice that you've got these options from a very, very low cost to an extraordinarily, you know, ridiculous cost. And some of the processing they're doing with the face detection that they've really made much better. If you are somebody who is using the camera for photos, they have this erase feature where, you know, you can basically say, I don't want that in my photo, take it out. And it's smart enough to get rid of that on new photos or even your old photos. So that tells me that the camera is really smart, and the hardware and software utilizing, you know, that camera is very smart. And that's important to me. I know we always talk about, well, how much of a quality camera do we need for OCR? Probably not much more than we already have, probably not at all. But I don't know, it just intrigues me. I like the style of how it was described and what I've heard about it. I don't know, I just think it's an Android phone that I could easily get into. If I was looking at a 13 or this, you know, the iPhone 13 or this, I'd really have to think about it. And it may come down to cost. It may come down to the economy that I want to be in or that I'm already in, like I said before. But I don't know. I really like that they've done this and put out a Pro version, because they're finally adopting and accepting the idea of what Apple's been doing of, yeah, we've been doing these low-end phones. We've kind of tiptoed into the high-end. And now they're just saying, you know what? We accept it. everybody has a different, you know, opinion or what they want for a phone. Let's offer it. So no, I just think there was many different things that they talked about in these phones that just it really intrigued me. I'd like to get my hands on one and really test it out, compare it to say an iPhone 13 and see, you know, how differently it does run, especially with TalkBack. Ever since they added the multi-finger gestures, I am more intrigued with what Android could do.
Robin, the AI part of this, the artificial intelligence in these phones, is getting better and better and better. And, you know, we saw a demonstration of someone dictating messages on their phone, you know, just simply dictating a text, and being able to use language like, hi, Robin, I've got something wrong with my left ear. Could you possibly pop around and take a listen, or, you know, a feel? Send. Now, if I was to do that on any other device, it would put the word send in at the end. But it doesn't. It actually picks up on the fact that you're in a text field, you're in a message app, you want to send that message. So instead of putting the word send in, it will even grammatically correct any of that, and then it will just emit the word send and send the message. So you don't have to have the swipe to the send button to send it off, which, I mean, that's
it
really cool.
It also puts in your punctuation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's good. Yeah, I do. Obviously, with Siri, you would just wait until she says, you know, blah, 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 repeating your message to you. Do you want to send it? And then you can
such
say
a
it. So
fan
still
boy.
A hands-free experience, but still, yeah.
Such no, a fanboy.
I should just say, though, Project Euphonia, which Google have done, been working on, brings dictation to people with quite significant speech impairments.
Mm.
So the ML on their systems on a chip are being put to really good use to bring more people into, you know, having the ability to dictate where it wouldn't have had a chance before. So they're, you know, they're using ML in areas to do with accessibility, which I think is very, very laudable. I think, you know, they're doing amazing things with accessibility as well.
And also, you know, to make reference to the camera as well, there's, I think, was it called the Equity mode, or not, yeah. Not mode, but it's part of the values of Google to, you know, make their cameras represent the people who use their devices more appropriately. And I was not aware of this, you know, and you know, I have to say, I could say I'm ignorant about it, but, you know, and I am, but I think, you know, not being able to see does play a part in this.
Well, there's,
you know, but basically the camera is now able to correctly display, I guess, that the color of someone's skin. I think that's, I'm right in saying that.
People of color.
Yes.
It wasn't doing a great job before.
Yeah.
Yeah, they even said that they believe this to be the most inclusive camera in a smartphone ever created. That was their line on stage. Because, yeah, this has been a problem for many years with cameras, with distortion of color and understanding of color, especially in different lighting environments. Someone with a darker color of skin may either be wiped out or even darkened out. You know, it could be bleached out. But if they're in a dark lit area or outside at night, you know, a lot of that color gets distorted or lost or washed out. So they're saying that they've found a way to make that be better and more inclusive when it comes to cameras for taking picture of people with people of color. So I like that. I like that that's something they're working on. And I know that all camera companies are working on this, whether it's in a smartphone or just a handheld digital, you know, camera. All the companies want this to be better. This has been a big thing for several years now, and I'm happy that they've finally, you know, gotten on this and worked on it.
Okay, let's take a break now and talk keyboard shortcuts with the Technology for Life team at RNIB.
Hello, I want to talk to you about computer keyboards. You know, these days people are using touchscreen devices like Kindles, like tablets, like smartphones, etc. But I want to talk to you about the original keyboard, the physical keyboard, the keyboard that we learned to touch type on for the first time, the keyboard that we purred over when it came to our first laptop, for example. And in particular, I want to mention various modifier keys that are important to me and maybe for you as well, if you're using a computer keyboard. The first key that I want to mention is very important, and it's one of my favorites, really. It's called the Applications key, also referred to as the Menu key, and it resembles an arrow pointing downwards with a menu. And this key is used in various applications and various interfaces within Windows. So, for example, you were placed on a desktop icon and you press the Applications key just once. It'll bring up a menu. And in that menu, you've got things like Open, Run Administrator, You've got things like properties, send to, open with, unzip. All of these kind of things are in the menu that comes up. And this key can be used in all arrays of modifications. So for example, you were in a document and you selected a piece of text. You could press the applications key and you could find commands for cut, copy, paste, inserting a hyperlink, removing a hyperlink, etc. All of these things are built in with the applications key. And it's worth exploring various things with the applications key because different menus have different options. If you were to press the applications key when focused on the recycle bin, for example, you would get options like empty recycle bin and properties and things like that. If you press the applications key on a different drive, for example, like the C drive or a removable USB drive, you would get other options to do with that. So the applications key is very important. It's equivalent to a right click on the mouse, and it is actually easier to get to rather than reaching for the mouse, finding the right click, moving the mouse to where you want to move it to, all of that kind of malarkey. Whereas here, you can just press the applications key and the menu pops up straight away. Some keyboards, especially on laptops, to save space, don't have an applications key. And there is an equivalent to that, which is the Shift and F10 key. Hold down the Shift key, press F10, and it brings up the menus that I've just described. The second key on my list is the Windows key. The Windows key is really important, especially if you're using a Windows computer. Obviously, these machines that have Windows built in can also run other operating systems, like Linux, for example. But we're going to concentrate on Windows today. And the Windows key, pressed on its own, brings up the start menu within Windows, where you can choose your directories, your files, your folders, etc. And when pressed with a different combination of keys, it performs different tasks. So Windows in A is the action center. Windows in B is the notification area or system tray. Windows in T will take you to the taskbar. Windows in D will take you to the desktop, and etc., etc. There's various keys or various commands Windows can perform when pressed with the Windows key. The Windows key resembles like a flag. So if you imagine four squares in a flag format, and for those that can see the keyboard, it's a flag that resembles yellow, red, blue, and green. The control key is also a very important key in Windows and also in other operating systems, because the control key controls things like copying text or items, pasting, cutting, undoing. All of these kind of things can be done with the control key. The control key can also be used within applications, like, for example, an email client. So if you pressed or hold down the control key and press N in a new, in say, for example, a Word document or an Outlook email client, it will either start a new document or start a new email. Control and R will reply to an email. Control F will forward an email or compose the search function in, say, for example, Microsoft Word. These presses can be done in various other applications as well. Like, for example, if you're moving files and folders from one area to another, you could hold down Control A to select every item in that folder or document. Control C will copy. Control V will paste. As I said before, the Shift key can be also used with the Control key. Two Shift keys can be found on most keyboards, most conventional QWERTY keyboards. One on the right, one on the left, usually just above or directly above the Control key. And the Control key and the Shift key, when pressed together, can perform different tasks. An example of this would be, say, for example, if you want to move an email message within Outlook, you could use Control, Shift, and V. And you can move it to the folder that you want to do. Control, Shift, and C will create a new contact. For example, Control, Shift, and A, appointment. Control, Shift, and Q, new meeting request. And it can be used in all kinds of various things. Like, for example, if you're on a desktop and you wanted to create a new folder, Control, Shift, and N will create a new folder. So the Control key and the Shift key together are very, very important. The other key I would say is very important is the Alt key. The Alt key is directly to the left of the spacebar on a conventional keyboard. And this usually relates to some kind of menu or ribbon within either a Windows Explorer field or a document. when you press the Alt key once, it will bring up the ribbon menu or a conventional ribbon or conventional menu within the document. When pressed in conjunction with another letter, it will bring up various commands. Like, for example, Alt and F will bring up a file menu, Alt and E an edit menu, Alt and T a tools menu. So the Alt key is very, very important. Some applications allow Control and Alt together as a modifier key. Like in the NVDA screen reading software, Control, Shift and N will initiate or launch NVDA. So that's quite an important combination. The Alt key can also be used with the Tab key. So for example, within Windows, you can choose different applications open that you have open by holding down the Alt key and pressing the Tab key. You can cycle through the different open applications by keeping the Alt key held down and pressing Tab. Keep pressing Tab and then release both keys when you reach the application that you want to switch to. Finally, there is something called an FN key. Usually this is found on most laptops. And for example, things like changing the brightness, changing the volume, turning off airplane mode, turning on Wi-Fi, that can be done using the FN key. It is typically found on the bottom row of keys alongside the Windows and Alt key, or in between those two keys. So Control, then FN, then Windows and Alt. So it's a second key in from the right. When you press this down and press any of the function keys, F1 through F12, it will perform different tasks as mentioned above. The two other keys I'll quickly want to mention are the caps lock key and insert key. When using a screen reader, especially when performing different modifications within the screen reader or performing different commands and tasks, you can hold down the insert or caps lock key and perform a task. So for example, in JAWS, insert an F7 will bring up a list of links. In NVDA, insert an F5 will bring up a list of forms. Caps lock and F will tell you the font size on a laptop, which insert will do on a desktop. So insert or caps lock can be used as modifier keys when using screen reading software like Narrator, NVDA or JAWS. Hopefully that's been useful. If you have any questions regarding your keyboard or anything else to do with technology, please feel free to drop us a line. Our lines are open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. 0303 123 9999. If you have email access, you can email our helpline, which is tfl@rnib.org.uk. You may also find answers to the questions that you have about technology on the technology section of our website, rnib.org.uk/technology. Until the next time, thank you.
Okay, guys, it's time for this.
Email. We get email. Get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
And once again, thank you so much to those of you who are sending in your emails and commenting on the show. I can only imagine the comments that we're going to be getting following the chat we've had about audio description today, because you know, I think a lot of people should be talking more about it. We need to get into this conversation more. I'm also intrigued to know people's thoughts on Google's event, because what's happening there? You know, are people starting to feel maybe it's time to make a move over? There's been a lot of issues and challenges with iOS and, you know, macOS as well, you know, which we maybe get into in a couple of weeks' time. We can talk about that. But yeah, anyway, let's get to some emails. Let's get our first email today.
Hello, Tech Talk team. Great show as always. I have a couple of issues. Firstly, I have a problem with the headset microphone unit I use at work for audio from my desk phone laptop running JAWS. Owing to a frayed cable being replaced, I'm afraid I have lost the audio out functionality from my microphone. Some colleagues might view that as a blessing. The unit control box is connected to my VoIP phone via an RJ11 connection and to my laptop via USB. It allows me to toggle between the audio from my phone or laptop, albeit I cannot listen to both simultaneously. It should allow me audio out via the microphone on either setting. Previously, I had a similar unit that took the audio from my laptop via an analog jack. Although that setup did allow me to split the audio from my phone laptop into separate ears simultaneously, I experienced terrible noise interference generated from other IT devices in the office. It became unusable for that reason. Utopia would be the ability to listen to both audio streams simultaneously in stereo as well as split them to separate ears. I have looked online to source a replacement unit, however the myriad array of options and techie terminology has bamboozled me. Given your audio and accessibility expertise, I thought you guys might be able to point me in the right direction.
Okay, well, we'll pause that email there and give the guys a chance to come back on that one. Robin, is this an area you've ever dabbled in?
This sounds horrendously complicated.
It is complicated, but in business it really is because of these VoIP phones.
Absolutely. I mean, I would recommend replacing his headset because it seems like the source of the challenge is that it's degraded, the cable is frayed and it's not working anymore. So I would go for that. But yeah, I mean, there are a range of kind of business focused solutions when it comes to, you know, earpieces. Often with the desktop phone systems of an organization, you can get an add-on Bluetooth device where it's just a little kind of stand and you've got an earpiece that sits in it charging, and whenever you want to answer the phone, you pop it off there and you pop it, kind of hooks over your ear and there's a little boom for the mic and stuff. So I know that's not ideal because you might be taking phone calls all the time, but at least then you've got your standard earphones in for everything else. You know, you're listening to Jaws, when the phone rings you quickly whip one out, pop this thing over your ear, and then you're doing the phone call. Either that or a desktop software version of the VoIP solution. I've never come across a corporate VoIP landline solution that doesn't have a software interface option as well.
But the challenges can be accessibility with that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, scripting or kind of, something worth looking into as well.
Rich also has some more in his email. Let's get to that.
I might be accused of being a middle-aged curmudgeon with a low tolerance threshold, but am I the only person who gets irritated by the low battery warnings that button on iOS when the device is down to 20% then 10% battery? Come on, Apple, treat me like a grown-up and at least allow me to toggle off this overbearing interference. If I run out of juice, that's down to me. I did express my frustration via Apple accessibility, however I suspect I may be in the minority of one. Generally speaking, I am an Apple enthusiast who appreciates the work they have done to foreground accessibility and to bring the needs of the disabled into the mainstream. Keep up the good work all. Cheers for now. Rich.
Thanks, Rich. Yeah. I mean, I must admit, I think that those warnings are quite annoying, and it would be nice if you could just tame them a little bit, you know, just have a bit of control.
In the new focus modes in iOS 15, which are very powerful, the developers of apps have the ability to flag or kind of tag notifications as time sensitive, which means that they will push through the barrier and you'll still be notified. And there is some concern that that will be misused or abused by developers who want to be able to notify you about, you know, your next DICE roll of being, you know, available in DICE World or something.
Because every app is important as far as they're concerned, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah, there is some concern that actually sort of spam notifications are going to get worse in iOS 15, but we'll see.
But that said, though, if we're talking, you know, system-wide for these, you know, low-power notifications, there have been times where I kind of wish I could just turn it off and not have it come up. And there are plenty of times where it saved my life. And I'm like, oh, gosh, wow, I didn't realize it was that low. Or I got the 20% notification and then just kind of forgot about it, got busy, got involved. And then the 10% came up and I was shocked and surprised that the 10% was coming up. So it can be very helpful, but I can understand where it could be annoying. And so no, Rich is not a complainer of one here, because no. I've had those times where I wish I could turn it off, or maybe even set it to a different, you know, set it to my own alert, you know, time.
It's so
maybe
funny, isn't it? Because every time it comes up, you're just like, oh, I know, I'll charge it up in a minute. All right.
Yeah, jeez.
If I'm out and about and I get the 20%, I always put it on low power mode. I always take advantage of that telling me that, because...
Well, then it shuts up, doesn't it?
But then that locks my phone, and I can't lock my phone.
The one that gets me is on the watch. When it goes into low power mode on the watch, it kills everything, including the watch. It doesn't even tell me the time anymore.
It's true.
Well. Awful. Okay, let's get one more email in. I want to get this one in from Charlotte. This is probably one of those ones to be continued, but we'll start here.
Hello, team. My laptop has become increasingly slow over the last few months and I am now financially able to buy another one. I have been thinking about getting one with JAWS installed direct from Sight and Sound, and firstly wondered what you think of this. I'm not bad tech ability wise, but I just find the idea of getting it out of the box and it already speaking so much better than trying to install myself. Secondly, they have a few to choose from, and I wondered if you would have any recommendations as to what I should look for. Cheers, kind regards, Charlotte Proctor.
Well, thank you, Charlotte. Good question. It's a great question, actually, if you think about it, because, you know, if you want, if you're a JAWS user and you want to buy a computer that's ready to go, there aren't that many options out there. I didn't realize that Sight & Sound offered that, which I think is actually pretty good. I have heard of Get Online at Home, which allows you to buy a computer, which is usually a second-hand computer, ex-office computers, usually, that have been donated back and recycled and, you know, offered at a low cost. You can install or get NVDA installed on it, ready to go, so that when it arrives with you, you can open up and just get on with it. If it's JAWS, though, yeah, you are limited a little bit. So, yes, if you want one like that, it would be advisable to talk to Sight & Sound. I haven't looked at the options, to be honest, and I'm not going to do Sight & Sound sales for them. But, you know, if you have a choice, you know, if there's a choice of computers. And, you know, again, it always depends on budget, I guess, guys, doesn't it? It depends on how much money you've got. I mean, I guess the answer is buy as big as you can with what you've got, right? I mean, if you can get the more RAM, the bigger hard drive, then it's going to benefit you longer term.
I think that, yes, budget, if budget's your main consideration, then, you know, there's no doubt at all that you can get some real bargains out there. Is Black Friday coming up soon?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And, you know, you could get some amazing bargains on maybe the, you know, the previous gen of something like the Dell XPS or something. And if you open it up and do control win enter, then it is talking to you, admittedly with Narrator, but Narrator is brilliant these days. So that would be really good support to be able to get you onto the, you know, Freedom Scientific website and downloading JAWS. So yeah, I don't know. It's all about budget, like you say.
I agree with everything you both said. All I have to say is that TTS voice that you use for that, Stephen, sounds much like the actress Shirley Henderson. For Harry Potter fans, that would be Moaning Myrtle. Something about that voice.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know you don't, but I know Robin does, and that's why he laughed.
The only thing I know
about
Harry Potter is the train in it. That's the only thing I know is a train, and I think I live somewhere near that train. That's
even
all I know.
Trains.
Look, we're out of time. We are out of time. The hour has gone, but thank you so much, guys, for getting up and doing this today. Really appreciate it, and we will do this again next week. Keep your emails coming, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tim, Robin, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.